Has he taken a break since everything imploded? Has he even had another slumber before this one? The answer, unfortunately, is no. He couldn't have when he's been by my side daily, and he's already confessed that once he's in that deep state, it takes him a couple of days of uninterrupted sleep to recover. I nap for a couple of hours with him as well, but I later go back to my garden to wet and clean my plants for the day. When I'm done later in the evening, I quickly wash myself and get back into bed with him. The following day, I do the same, thinking he would awaken in the evening. Yet he doesn't. Once more, when I go to bed at night, he's still deep asleep, as he is when I awaken. Goodness, but I can't imagine how he must have stayed on his feet if he was that tired. Without the blessing that is his company, I get bored easily by mid-afternoon. I have no idea how I'd gone about my day before he appeared in my life, because now everything seems tedious. I sit in front of my purple flower, admiring it once more. It still doesn't have a name, a proper name. In my botany book, it had been referred to by its geographic location, since it is endemic to one area in particular. It's sometime later that a loud noise startles me. Jumping to my feet, my lips spread into a big smile as I dash down the pathway, thinking Eamon must have awoken. Yet as I reach the landing of the stairs, my smile dies down as I come face to face with my mother, her expression thunderous. "Where is he?" she bites out, striding towards me. Instinctively, I shrink back, but not before her palm connects with my cheek. "What are you talking about?"
"The mare you're hiding in here. Where is he?"
she asks as she comes into my garden, her eyes scanning every corner. "I'm not hiding anyone," I reply.
"Lies,"
she grits out as she comes to face me again. Yet this time, when she tries to strike me, I channel my power to the surface, my entire skin becoming electrified, which seems to make her pause.
"Aristol saw you, you stupid girl. He saw you at his party on the arm of a male."
"I don't know what you're talking about," I continue. She's unrelenting as she barges into the study, then the kitchen, inspecting everything around.
"I know you're hiding him somewhere. Who is he?"
"I have no idea what you're talking about, Mother."
"So it's just a coincidence that Aristol sees someone who looks exactly like you, and then two of my friends die in the most horrific ways?"
She yells at me, a vein throbbing at her temple. I don't know what you're talking about. I swear." I lie, demurely shrinking back. Yet it's when she decides to go upstairs, to my bedroom, that panic gets the best of me. Eamon trusted me with this. He trusted me with his life, and with his most vulnerable state. I can't fail him. I don't even know what my mother is capable of. She might know about my abilities, but I know nothing of hers. "Mother, just stop for a moment and explain to me clearly what this male thinks he saw. It's preposterous that you would assume it was me when I haven't exited this house in more than a decade." I call out as I follow her up the stairs. Panic surges in my chest as I hurry and plant myself in front of her so that she won't be able to open the door to the bedroom.
"I thought it odd when Nelly requested additional food, but then it all makes sense if you're fostering some vagrant. What did he tell you, Sella? What idiocies did he fill your brain with that you would allow him to do something like that?"
I don't know what you mean, Mother."
"No one else would have targeted Hans and Andrea like that," she hisses. "Who else would have known about them?"
"I don't know. There are other victims," I add dryly. "I can't be the only one they experimented on."
"Experiment? That's my confirmation."
She shakes her head in disgust.
"Only someone else could have introduced that word into your vocabulary. And I demand to know who he is."
"No one. I keep telling you. There's absolutely no one. I don't know what you heard from that friend of yours, but I never left this house. I'm terrified to take one step in the outside world, and you think I would go to some party? How?" Her nostrils flare, and before I know it, she pushes me aside as she barges inside the bedroom. "Mother, stop!" My mouth drops in shock as I note the empty room, just as a feeling of tranquility overtakes me. He's gone. Eamon is awake and gone. "See? There's no one here." She releases a string of curses before she marches back downstairs, but as she's about to leave, she levels me a harsh stare. "This isn't over. I know it was you, and I know you're working with someone, you ungrateful little bitch. After all I've done for you, and this is how you pay me back. By betraying me? By going after my friends?" "But I haven't done anything," I complain.
"I don't have proof yet, but rest assured I will get it. And when I find out who the male you're hiding is, you will pay for this transgression, Sella."
Just as she opens the door, I spot at least 20 soldiers in front of the house.
"What?" "They will keep watch, both inside and outside the house. You chose the wrong moment to rebel, Sella. And by Vessar, I'm going to enjoy killing that male of yours."
As she gives the soldiers orders, 5 of them enter the house, 1 in each room.
"Mother, this is preposterous! You're letting a male in my bedroom to stand there at all times!"
"I don't trust you."
She shakes her head.
"Too bad you're still useful to me."
Her words confuse me, but I don't get to dwell on them as I return to find my home entirely occupied with strangers. The front door closes, and I know my mother has already left, leaving me to deal with these strangers. No sooner had the guards assumed their positions than they drop dead. One by one, they melt in a puddle of grime on the floor.
"Tell me I can kill her,"
he demands as he appears, anger radiating from every pore in his body.
"Tell me I can fucking slaughter her for putting her hand on you."
He reaches out to touch me, carefully stroking the cheek my mother had slapped. "It's not too bad."
"She wanted you to live with 5 males. 5, Sella,"
he grits out.
"And if you knew what was on their mind."
He exhales deeply as he leans down to place his forehead on top of mine.
"She didn't care that she was leaving you here to be raped, for those men only had one thing on their mind."
A shudder goes down my body at his words. "Thank you for keeping me safe," I murmur, hugging him close.
"Let me kill her."
And just like that, I hesitate. She's the only mother I've ever known. How could I possibly condemn her to death? "We need to leave," I whisper instead. "I can't stay here anymore under her scrutiny. Not like this. Not when I could endanger you too."
"But your home. Your garden."
He draws back to search my features.
"You would abandon your beloved garden."
"It's no longer my home," I confess. "Flowers and plants can be replanted. A house can be rebuilt. But the feeling of home can never be restored. This," I motion to the house, "ceased to be my home the moment you appeared in my life." Our gazes find each other, grasping, arresting. He stares at me as his breathing intensifies, his nostrils flaring.
"Damn it, Sella. You're making me lose what little control I still have,"
he rasps. I'm about to ask him why, but the moment I open my mouth, his lips claim mine as he kisses me so hungrily. My heart feels like it's about to burst in my chest. His hands cup my head as he angles my head to the side so he can kiss me deeper until my head swims with euphoria, my body humming with approval for every little touch of his skin on mine. Taking hold of his hands, I move them lower to my breasts, encouraging him to touch me further. He always pulls the brakes when our kisses get too heavy, but in this instance, it's not enough. "Eamon," I whimper against his mouth. His sharp teeth nibble at my lips, drawing drops of blood which he laps at, sucking my tongue into his mouth. A growl escapes him as he fits me to his body, so tightly I can feel his hardness protruding against my stomach. Yet just as I think he's going to take it further than ever before, he wrenches himself from me. His eyes are wholly black as he tilts his head, his ears pricking at some inaudible sound.
Soldiers,
he suddenly speaks, his lip twitching in distaste.
They're close, very close, Sela. They must have used a cloaking spell.
Cloaking spell?
Sorcery.
He spits as if it was the most disgusting thing.
We've encountered those in battles before. It means there must be a sorcerer nearby, too.
Aristol. Aemon nods.
It must be him.
He grits out.
Don't worry. I'm going to end this once and for all, Sela Mina.
He promises, before he disappears. My eyes widening, I run towards the exit, opening the door and stepping outside on my own for the first time in too long. My entire body trembles as my eyes accommodate to the change in scenery in front of me. Yet as soon as I take everything in, my mouth opens in shock. There are tens, maybe hundreds of soldiers stationed in front of the house. All at once I realize that my mother's visit had only been a bait as she tried to draw Aemon out. Aemon, don't! I shake my head at him when I spot him facing off all those soldiers. Don't use your powers, please. The last thing he needs is for the world to find out he is part Revar. Then all his efforts would have been in vain. Everyone would fear him by virtue of his heritage alone. He half turns. Dressed in a pair of black linen trousers and a loose top that's tied with a belt around his waist, he removes his sword, the movement slow as the metal shines in the sunlight. Despite seeing Aemon use his abilities before, this is the first time I'm seeing him fight with his sword. He gives me a sharp nod.
Only as long as you are not in danger, Sela.
He speaks in my mind. A battle cry resounds through the air, and the soldiers march forward, charging at Aemon. And this is what it has come to. One standing against hundreds. Gods, but the sight sickens me to my stomach, and I know I can't let Aemon fight this on his own. Tensing my muscles, I let all the energy course through me as I call it to the surface. Once it's simmering on my skin, I let it seep into the ground, controlling the tendrils of electricity as I send them to the soldiers, burning them alive the moment they touch them. I walk towards them as I send everything I have in me towards the envoy. A blast of fire comes my way, but due to my misplaced focus, I see it too late to avoid it. It catches the side of my head, the heat so powerful it blasts off half my face. I blink against the scorching pain as I turn slowly towards the assailant. My face is slowly mending together, the tissue repairing under everyone's sight. I've been trying to protect Aemon's secret, and I've revealed mine. Yet I can't seem to care. He matters. He is the hope of the Empire. As long as his reputation suffers no damage, I'm willing to be his shield. Turning my attention to my attacker, I send him a blast of electricity that fries his entire body.
Sela!
Aemon roars when he sees my mending flesh.
Don't do it, lass! Don't get involved!
He just felled 10, if not more, warriors just to be able to tell me those words. And even as his attention is on me, his sword is slashing through enemy skin, deftly avoiding the armor and going for the weak points. I'll protect you, Aemon, I tell him. What good does it do to be invincible and not use it? With that thought solidified in my head, I proceed forward, using my energy to fight off one line of soldiers while Aemon cuts through the lines of people. Yet it's still not enough, as more and more soldiers appear. How could my mother have gotten access to this many forces? Another moment of inattention, and a sword slices through my arm. The pain makes me hiss as I see my arm drop to the ground, only to turn into smoke, disappearing into thin air as my flesh starts to regenerate. Everyone is staring at me as if I were indeed a creature. But before I can unleash my electric snakes on them, Aemon teleports to my side. Blood drips from his face, staining his hair and every inch of his skin. His eyes are wholly black, just as more darkness seems to seep from his eyes into his skin. "Aemon, what's happening?" I whisper when I see him.
"You're hurt,"
he rasps, his voice deeper than before, the bass making the hairs on my body stand up. He lifts my still-regenerating hand as he stares at it, his cheek twitching in displeasure.
"You're hurt,"
he growls, the sound louder. The soldiers advance towards us, but with one look, Aemon has them stop in their tracks, an invisible barrier seemingly holding them in place. "Aemon."
"You hurt her,"
he screams, the sound of his roar turning into a physical blast that, as soon as it reaches the first row of soldiers, transforms them into little else but goo on the ground. It's almost as if he's not himself anymore. "Don't," I whisper, but he doesn't listen. He's already charging at the soldiers, his feet barely reaching the ground as if he's stepping on air. Yet that's not the most alarming feature. It's the fact that the black from his eyes is seeping into his skin, his body almost doubling in size as his hands turn to claws. And I blink, thinking I'm certainly not seeing this right. But there's a tail. That's a tail, isn't it?
"You hurt her,"
he yells once more. If before most of the males had been regular soldiers, the ones arriving now seem to have special abilities too, as blast after blast is thrown at Aemon. Immediately, I become scared that he could get hurt by this, but it seems that with his changed appearance, there are new abilities coming to light. Like the fact that his darkened skin seems to serve as some sort of armor. The black linen gets blasted and burned off his body, but his chest doesn't get injured at all. But it's not like me, where I get hurt and then I heal. No, his skin seems like a thick shield that can block any attack so far. Like this, he's unstoppable. I know it, just as the soldiers are realizing it too. More people come towards him, but even if they land a hit on him, it doesn't affect him at all. At this point, Aemon is a mindless war machine, bent on destroying everyone. My lips part in a combination of horror and awe as he uses his bare hands to smash people to pieces. Given his change in size, his fists are now the size of a soldier's head, helmed head. He can easily grasp it and squeeze, causing it to pop. Soon I can see his strategy and his weakness. He can't use his mental abilities while using his physical ones at the same time, and that means that while he's slaughtering one row with his hands, he reduces the next to mush with his matter manipulation, then goes back to using his hands. I wonder if there's an interval at which he can use his ability, and that's why he alternates like this. But even as I study his movements, I can't help but admire the way he is absolutely magnificent in fight. Despite his monstrous change, maybe because of it, blood has never looked better on someone. His skin armor is so strong that I doubt even my energy could penetrate it. The sight of him alone is enough to inspire terror in everyone, some of the soldiers fainting before Aemon even gets to them. As I admire the fight, I note a couple trying to tackle me from the side, and I decide to do something else. Instead of letting the electricity tendrils seep into the ground, I use them as lassos. Holding my hands out, I wheel the energy to materialize before me, one in each hand. They have a yellow-bluish tint, and as I grasp them, I feel a slight tingling sensation in my palms. Turning my eyes on my adversaries, I use each lasso concomitantly as I throw them towards the soldiers, watching with satisfaction when they coil around their necks, suffocating them at first, before sending the first high voltage of electricity and frying them. Aemon must be halfway through the soldiers who'd arrived here. At this point, in no time he'll run through all of them. I smile at my big protector. He would stop an entire army from getting to me. As I step forward to go to him, I feel fingers coil around my arm, thrusting me backwards. I'm about to call up my tendrils of electricity again when I note it's my mother, a scowl deeply embedded in her features.
"Call off your pet,"
she sneers.
"He's not my pet."
I push her hand away.
"He's my mate,"
I declare proudly. Her expression changes immediately. From a disapproving one, it slowly morphs into a terrified one.
"What have you done?"
she whispers in horror.
"You don't know what you've done, Sella."
Her eyes travel down my body, almost as if she's searching for something.
"Have you bedded him?"
she asks suddenly.
"What? Have you or have you not bedded him?"
she hisses at me. "It's none of your business, and I'm done hiding away from the world." Her lip curls in distaste as she scoffs at me.
"It's a world that will chew you up and spit you out damaged beyond belief, Sella. I did you a service hiding you all this time, giving you the best money could buy, and this is how you repay me, by mating with a creature."
"He's not a creature," I tell her. Despite the erroneous literature I'd been digesting my entire life, Eamon told me it's true that non-humanoid creatures are not welcomed in society. Nothing that doesn't fit the norm is. You have powers? Perfect. You don't look a certain way, then you don't matter.
"Whatever he is, call him off or you're going to regret it. Both of you."
I look at her in disgust, and I cannot believe this is my mother.
"How could you treat me so? I'm your daughter,
your blood. Don't I matter in the least? Doesn't my happiness matter?"
"He doesn't when there's a greater purpose at play,"
she says as she grabs me again. This time, however, her touch hurts. Looking down, I note her hand glowing just as her lips are moving in a low chant.
"What are you doing? Stop this!"
I try to push her off me, summoning my energy, but I find that I cannot do it.
"Sella!"
Eamon's cry resounds through the clearing, now littered with tens, if not hundreds, of corpses. He can feel my alarm and my silent struggle, and as he appears before us, my mother smiles. It's then that I know she means to do something. She... I can't even form my next thought before her other hand is on my chest. But it doesn't stop there. No, it penetrates my skin until I feel her fingers clench around my heart. My eyes widen in disbelief.
"Surrender, General, and she will live,"
my mother adds smugly. I can only see Eamon from the corner of my eye. His new shape is absolutely breathtaking in its savageness. But as he sees the danger, he starts to morph back, his tail and claws already fading and leaving way to weakness. I shake my head in horror, afraid they could hurt him.
"I can heal! Don't do it, Eamon!"
I call out confidently, wrapping my fingers around my mother's wrist and tugging at her hand.
"Can you?"
She raises a brow.
"You think you have no weakness, do you?"
She smiles arrogantly.
"I can do it, Eamon. I know I can do it,"
I tell him, but he's not listening. He's staring at her hand in my chest, the way she's holding on to my heart.
"If I squeeze too tightly, her heart is going to explode in her chest. Even if you think she can heal, will you take a chance on it?"
"Eamon, no!"
"Sella."
He releases a ragged breath as his dark form is completely gone, leaving behind the Eamon that I know. He has a crazed look of fear on his face as his eyes go from my mother's hand to my chest, almost as if he doesn't know what to do.
"I can't risk it."
He shakes his head. Some soldiers move from behind, approaching slowly and waiting for my mother's command.
"No. Eamon, please don't,"
I whisper, realizing what my mother plans to do. This had been her goal from the beginning, hadn't it? It wasn't to scare me or threaten me. It was to catch Aemon somehow. Except, how had she known? How had she known the male from the party was him?
I can't risk you, Sela,
he says.
I can't risk that she's right.
Surrender, D'Artem, and I will remove my hand.
His eyes flash red at her as he releases an animalistic snarl. My mother flinches, and I note that despite her air of confidence, she's afraid of him.
Let her go,
he growls, his eyes growing black again.
On your knees,
she commands him. He gives me a look, full of longing, as he mouths, a sorry. The soldiers come forward, holding rhodium chains and gloved hands. They plan on... My breath hitches as panic hits me. Full-blown, horrifying panic that clogs my airways as I take him in, and the intention reflected in his gaze. I can see the love, but I can also see the sacrifice. Slowly, his knees buckle before they hit the ground, yet his proud demeanor doesn't change. Head high, back straight, he looks my mother dead in the eye as he says,
"You may chain me this time, but next time you will meet the end of my sword. Or,"
he smirks,
"you will join your soldiers on the ground."
Shut him up,
my mother commands. I'm helpless as I watch the soldiers put the rhodium chains around his body, as well as a gag in his mouth. The chains must have been bespelled, because the moment they meet his skin, they shrink until his movements are fully restricted.
Wait for me, Sela. Nothing will stop me from coming for you, just as nothing will save them from my wrath.
The moment Aemon is restrained, my mother withdraws her hand from my chest. I draw a deep breath as my heart beats harshly in my chest. Yet as I move towards Aemon, a needle pokes at my skin as my mother injects something into my veins. Aemon, I whisper as I wobble towards him, but I don't reach him. I just fall.
Chapter 28.
My limbs are sluggish as I drag myself on the ground. My mouth is dry and parched, and as I open my eyes, I find myself in a foreign location. The events from before slowly come back to me, and my eyes widen as I remember how I'd last seen Aemon, on his knees, sacrificing himself for my sake. Just as horror sinks in at the thought of my Aemon in danger, so does my determination soar. He'd surrendered for me, on the off chance that my mother was telling the truth, and my heart is my weakness. He gave up everything for me at that moment, because it's not just his life he's forfeited, but that of those loyal to him, and any hope for justice. According to what we'd spoken, Aemon was certain they wouldn't kill him immediately if they captured him. They would torture him to get a confession out of him before publicly executing him. All of it is a well-crafted plan to ensure that any ongoing loyalties to him within the Empire would be squashed. Aemon had been rather modest when he told me that he has followers in all corners of the Empire, and not all in the military. Seeing the effort my mother and whoever else she's working with are putting into this, it's clear they consider him a threat.
I'm coming for you.
Even if it takes the impossible, I'm not going to let anything or anyone stand in my way. My pulse accelerates as strength flows through my limbs as I force myself to my feet. Taking in my surroundings, I note it's something similar to a cell, but the location is not familiar. Where had my mother taken me? The cell is dark, and the only door that leads outside of it has a small grilled window. There is no other source of light inside. Making my way to it, I grasp onto the metal bars as I raise myself on the tips of my toes so I can look outside.
Is anyone there?
I call out, my echo traveling far through the hallway. This tells me the location is quite big, and as such might be guarded by a fair number of guards. Flexing my palms, I try to summon my energy to the surface, afraid that my mother would have messed with it somehow. After all, she definitely pulled some tricks I was not aware of when she'd gone from my heart and injected me with that magical sedative. I am certain it was magical, because they'd experimented with normal ones on me in the past, and my body would break down the compounds extremely fast, so they ultimately never achieved their intended effect. Within seconds, I feel the usual tingling, my entire body becoming surrounded by the familiar tendrils of electricity. Maybe it's sheer determination that's causing this, but my power pulsates to life like never before. Placing my hands on the door, I push some of the energy into the metal. At first, my purpose is to melt away the closing mechanism and open the door. As soon as I touch it, however, something completely different happens. The door is thrust backward, almost like a projectile, hitting the back of the hallway and freeing the way for me to move. I don't linger. Already I hear people moving around and yelling orders as they undoubtedly heard the crash and are coming to check it out. Running towards the end of the hallway, I come to a narrow staircase that is quickly filling with guards as they march towards me. Closing my eyes, I focus on the same energy to create a blast that I throw towards the first 5 soldiers I see in front of me. "Oops," I mutter under my breath, as they turn rather crispy in front of me.
"Stop her!"
More voices echo in the building as I climb up the stairs, just as more males charge towards me. As I advance, I hone in on my concentration, keeping the same level of electricity at the surface of my skin. The moment anyone tries to touch me, whether with a hand, foot, or weapon, they get burned. Remembering the way Aemon's skin had turned into an armor, I try the same. No one stands a chance as I make my way to the exit. Even when soldiers with powers are sent after me, it's quite easy to block their attacks. More surprisingly, I find that I can manipulate energy no matter the source, whether it's mine or theirs. And as one of the soldiers sends a blast towards me, I open my palm, absorbing it. Instead of using my electricity as a shield that reflects back the blast, I use it to consume it instead, adding some of my own energy as I redirect it stronger than before. With no defenses to speak of, they stand no chance.
"But what are you?"
A male asks me, as he watches in horror his burned arm, my tendrils sneaking up on him and burning an inch at a time. "Death," I whisper when his heart stops. "And I will be death for as long as I must to get back to my beloved." I shield my eyes from the sun as I finally find the way out. Odd how even my anxiety about going out into the world has dimmed to a mere afterthought. Despite the ever-constant fear of what I will encounter out there, it's something I need to do. I need to push my own limits. For him. For me. For us. Looking around, I note I'm somewhere at the edge of a forest. I still don't know where my Aemon could be, but my intuition tells me they would have taken him to the palace to interrogate him, and have him admit to assassinating the former emperor. That means I must go to the capital. But how do I get there? Looking down at myself, I cringe at the state I'm in. My dress, though not one of my prized gifts from Aemon, had still been in fairly good condition before the fight. Now it's ripped and torn at the bottom. One sleeve is missing, and there is mud and blood caked all over it. As I rake my hands through my hair, I note there's more mud and blood there, too. Good thing there isn't a mirror in front of me, or I would probably have a heart attack. Taking a deep breath, I start in the direction of the forest. My knowledge from books and Aemon's stories are the only things that can help me find my way at this point. And one thing I remember is that sturdy roads were built all around the Empire some 1,000 years ago. All of them had been designed to provide easy access to the capital. If I come across a road and follow it, maybe I'll be lucky enough to come across some travelers who could take me with them. Since I don't know where I am on the map, I've no idea how far I am from the capital. The Viserion Empire is absolutely enormous, so much so that I have no idea how it's endured as it has, until now without breaking apart due to revolts or civil war. There are plenty of factions inside that aren't exactly fans of how the Empire has been operating in the last centuries. Specifically, there's a lot of bad blood with the recently annexed territories that still maintain their national identity, no matter how much the Empire has tried to force its language and traditions upon them. There is only one recognized official language, Viserion. But the more you travel, the more languages and dialects you will find. One of the reasons why there is so much unrest in the Empire. When you have so many group identities, which sometimes go beyond the national in the case of some species, it's hard to find common ground and establish a strong Viserion identity. As Aemon had told me, one of the most polarizing issues in the Empire is the fact that non-humanoid species are mostly enslaved and robbed of any benefits that basic citizens have. They would be the first ones to oppose the Empire, but because one of the earlier emperors had already foreseen this issue, he'd passed laws that ensured they would be spread out all over the vast territory of the Empire based on their species, so they wouldn't come together and rebel. He'd taken advantage of interspecies enmities and had created a new map for the Empire where every people was placed strategically to avoid coalitions. So while the army is leading perpetual wars outside of the Empire, it also polices what happens inside, since a civil war could start at the drop of a hat. And that is why the Empire is so terrified of Aemon. Because he has the potential to unite all those factions under a common goal, with his name and prestige, he would be the only one who could entreat different species to involve themselves in a potential war. But more than that, he has the power to sway the citizens too.
"Wait for me," I whisper. I don't know what state I will find him in, but I'm praying with all I have that I won't be too late. I've never been a believer, or practiced any religion, mostly because my mother prohibited me from doing so. And like the good girl that I was, I always obeyed her. Now, looking back, I realize it had been manipulation on her part, just as she'd done with the false books she'd given me to read. If I believed anything other than her, then I would have had reason to hope for another future that didn't have anything to do with her. I would have probably been curious about the outside world, and I might have rebelled earlier, all things which she tried to avoid. For that reason, I've never had books that covered the topic of religion in the Viserion Empire, though it had been, at times, briefly mentioned in other writings. It had been Aemon who'd opened my eyes, as he told me about the practices in the capital.
The other areas of the Empire are more different, and, just like languages, you will find plenty of religions, gods, and pantheons throughout the Empire. But the only recognized one is the Viserion Pantheon, led by Vesar, the god of war. There are plenty of other major and minor deities in the Viserion Pantheon, but the cult of Vesar has been the most popular for thousands of years for no other reason than that it gives credence to the Empire's mission to conquer the entire known world.
Oh, Aemon, how I miss you.
Just thinking about him being hurt and in pain makes me want to raise the entire damned Empire to the ground. Even being separated for this short amount of time, and already I don't feel whole. After walking what feels like an eternity, I reach a road. My face lights up, and I'm about to do a celebration dance when I see a carriage coming up. Not knowing which is the direction for the capital, I just dash towards it, waving my arms up like a crazy person in hopes they will see me. Lucky for me, it stops.
Are you lost, miss?
The door to the carriage opens, and I note the features of a male a little older than me. I suppose it's hard to know someone's age when they could be equally 30 or 300 years old. Could you point me to the way to the capital?
You're going to the capital?
His brows go up as his eyes rove over my dirty clothes, his lip twitching in disgust. It's soon masked, though, as he gives me a pleasant smile.
We're going in that direction. I can take you with me. There is one spare spot in the carriage.
As I move closer, I see there are two other males inside. The thought of being in such close quarters with three strange males is not a comfortable one, so I simply ask, could you tell me how long it will take me on foot?
On foot?
One of them exclaims in dismay.
1 or 2 days, I reckon. No one should make that distance on foot.
But...
it's only a few hours with the carriage if you will join us.
The male from the beginning interjects. I don't know. I bite my lip in apprehension. But as I think of Eamon and his suffering, I know that I must put my sensibilities aside and approach this from a practical angle. I need to get to him as fast as possible. My mind made up, I look up at him and give him a determined nod.
Wonderful. Hop in, miss.
He says as he opens the door wider for me to step inside. I do my best not to touch any of the occupants as I plop myself on the empty seat. The carriage starts moving again, and I take a moment to observe the males. They are dressed in quality garb, and the carriage itself looks to be constructed with expensive materials.
So what is your business in the capital?
The first male asks me. I force a smile. I'm supposed to meet with my husband. I lie. He frowns, his eyes once again on my tattered dress.
Looking like that?
Another man bursts out, but it's clear he's voicing what everyone else is thinking. I had a little accident on the way. I release a small laugh.
Well, I hope you're fine now.
Of course, I reply, happy when they stop questioning me and go about their own discussions. The first hour passes quite uneventfully, and when I inquire how much longer, I'm told we're around halfway there. Yet as night falls and the carriage veers off the road, my suspicions start to mount, so much so that I'm already on my guard when I feel a sharp metal against my neck. The blade glints in the moonlight, its sheen confirming it is a rhodium one.
Take off your dress, girl, and I won't have to hurt you.
One of them says, and the others laugh, shuffling around to remove their own clothes. You commented on my torn dress, and now you want it? I ask ironically.
You know what I mean.
He barks. No, I don't think I know. I say as I move closer, letting the blade dig into my neck.
Foolish wench, you're going to fucking die.
He rebukes me, though he doesn't take the knife away from my throat. Isn't that what your plan is? I inquire languidly, as I build a shield around myself. After all, I doubt you'd let me live after you have your way with me.
But you have to be alive first.
He laughs, and the others join in. I'd rather take my chances with death, I mumble under my breath. Lifting one finger up, I turn to them, letting the blade swipe over my skin some more, drawing blood.
What do you think you're doing?
This? I ask innocently as I bring my fingers to the blade, electricity pouring into the metal, which conducts it straight to the man's body. His cries of pain echo in the carriage before he slumps against his seat, his body charred. The smell of burned flesh permeates the air, and the other two seem to realize that they will not be having any fun times. Scrambling to exit the carriage, one of them trips and falls to the ground, while the other runs straight into the woods. I take my time to get out, pushing the smelly corpse onto the ground before creating 2 lassos with my hands, using both to bring the runaways back. It's not very nice of you to accost a lady, I tisk at them. You really should be thankful my husband isn't anywhere near, or he wouldn't have been twice as merciful. I smile. They blabber some more, but I'm not inclined to hear silly excuses when their intentions were clear. Why couldn't you prove my mother wrong, that the world isn't a dangerous place? I sigh as I imbue the lassos with electricity. The driver of the carriage looks shocked as he places his hands up, dropping to his knees and begging me to spare him. I still need to get to the capital. You can take me there. My voice doesn't leave room for discussion, and he nods fervently, thanking me for saving his life. Before I get in the carriage again, though, I take out the luggage the men had brought with them. Using my palm as a source of light, it seems I'm finding more and more uses for my abilities. I sift through the clothes in hopes I can find something I can use. Clearly, with my current appearance, I'm only going to attract the wrong kind of attention, which is the last thing I need. The only thing that seems to be remotely useful is a pair of loose pants, a shirt, and a jacket. Sighing, I decide it's better than nothing. Luckily, I also find a pouch full of coins, which should serve me well, especially since I need to get some food and water. I might be indestructible, at least to a certain degree, but I still need sustenance. Taking the clothes with me inside the carriage, I instruct the driver to get going while I change, and for the next hour and a half, I make myself comfortable as I wait to get to the capital.
Here we are, miss,
the driver tells me as the carriage comes to a halt. You were their hired driver, were you not? He nods. Then you're welcome to keep the carriage. I'll be off. I incline my head before turning to look at the capital. Aemon had made it sound like it's the center of decadence, but from where I'm standing, it looks a little decrepit. There are street lamps in the distance, and I make my way towards them. I walk for a few minutes in absolute silence before the atmosphere begins to be more buoyant. Shops appear on each side of the road, merchants still selling their items at this late hour of the night. People are bustling up and down the street, some peddling their trade, others shopping from stall to stall. I'm guessing this is a more mercantile area, still not in the center of the capital. Walking around, I note the people around, some humanoid, some not. In fact, with how busy the street is, I can't believe I'm not in the least afraid of walking around, since I've never been among so many people on my own. Yet after the previous events, I find that there's little to be scared of when I can take care of myself. After all, people might look frightening, but when it comes to a direct confrontation, I am the more frightening one. That isn't to say I can go around flaunting my powers. Considering how distinctive they are, it's the one thing I need to refrain from doing if I don't want to draw attention to myself. Walking deeper into the city, I come to a halt when I can make out the shape of the Emperor's palace in the distance. Though the darkness of the night affects the visibility, the palace's windows blare with light, illuminating the sheer size of it and making me blink in surprise at the opulence I'm seeing. Soon. First, I need to gather some information. If they captured the great Shadow General, rumors are bound to swirl around, if only to emphasize the status of the new Emperor. I just need to find the right hub and listen. Feeling the weight of the coins in my pocket, I swallow hard as my stomach rumbles with hunger. Maybe I can do that while eating, too. As I throw my gaze around, I spot a place that's overflowing with clients. Straightening my spine, I confidently walk inside and seat myself at a table, as I see others doing.
"What can I bring you?"
a girl wearing a colorful apron asks. I bite my lip as I look around. What do you recommend?
We have the specialty pie that's most popular. That and the ale.
She chuckles as she nods to some patrons tugging ale from an enormous mug. I'll have that then. Thank you.
I'll be right back.
She winks at me. Fidgeting with my hands as I look right and left, I surreptitiously push my table forward so I can hear what the people at the other tables are talking about.
Here you go. One pie and one ale.
The girl lays them on the table. How much is it?
1 runa.
She smiles. I might add the fact that I'm not familiar with physical money as another thing that I'm not proficient in. Looking through my pouch, I take out one of the smaller coins, thinking this could be it. The girl's eyes widen.
That's a vesa. No, no.
She shakes her head as she leans in to look at my pouch. Fishing out one bigger coin, she shows me the side of it, which has a woman wearing a headpiece, the goddess of the household. Next to it, the letters R-U-N-A are carved at the bottom. Ah, thank you, I tell her honestly, and because she was so helpful, and without ill intention, I take out another rune and hand it to her.
I can't take that.
Please. I push the coin towards her. Thank you for everything.
If you're sure.
She teeters on her feet, before eventually taking the coin and leaving. I hadn't exactly looked at the money when I'd found it, but now I find myself curious to see what the rest of the coins look like. Vesa has an engraving of Vesar, the god of war. There are mostly Vesas in the pouch, with a few runas and another one called Trevor for Trevio, the god of metals. Since Vesar is the head of the pantheon, I assume the Vesa has the highest value. Putting my money aside, I take a fork and dive into the hot pie. The smell is already intoxicating, and as I take the first mouthful, I can't help but be surprised at how good it is. I force myself to eat slowly, washing it down with sips of ale. Yet the mere fact that I'm eating alone, without Aemon, takes away from my enjoyment of the meal. How can I eat with such gusto when I don't even know if he's been fed, if he was afforded even one sip of water? Though I finish my meal, it's hard to hold the tears at bay. It's only when I hear some murmurs, followed by the words Shadow General, that I shake myself, my ears perking up as I strain to hear better.
They're lying. The Shadow General wouldn't be captured so easily. Everyone I spoke to heard the same, and a few said they witnessed it too. They did. There was a procession at dawn on the main road when they took him to the palace. They had him all chained up. Everyone swears it was him. How many people do you know with this signature white hair? But the General's never been defeated in battle. How could anyone? Who knows what tricks they used to catch him? I'm telling you, this is all that new Emperor's plan. He knows we don't like him. But this will make people not like him even more.
Someone protests.
Yes, but it'll also make people fear him. Everyone knows how strong the General is. For him to be defeated...
He trails off, the implication clear. So Aemon is indeed in the palace.
I heard they plan to execute him regardless of whether he confesses or not. Of course they will. Even if he doesn't confess, he will send a message to anyone who thinks to stand up to the Emperor.
As the discussion turns more political, I realize that my window is much smaller than I believed. If they plan to execute him anyway, then it could happen at any point. My heart speeds up as fear overtakes me. Somehow I need to act. Getting up from my table, I move to the back as I spot the nice girl who'd served me. I'm new around here, and I had a question. I tell her as I catch up with her for a moment.
Yes? What can I help with?
Do you happen to know how one could get into the palace? I've always wanted to visit. Her frown cuts my words as I hurry to ask what's wrong.
No one visits the palace. It's forbidden. You need a special invitation to even be allowed through the gates.
And who would have one of those invitations?
Only soldiers and officials, sometimes the aristocracy, but I wouldn't recommend it. There have been people who've tried, and they've been killed for it.
I see. Thank you for the advice.
Have a good night,
she offers as I wave her goodbye. Mulling over her words, I decide that the best course of action is to head to the gates and observe who gets in and who gets out. Ideally, I don't want to use my powers and draw attention to myself, in case they have another army ready to send after me. I might be strong, but I don't know how strong I am. Certainly, I doubt I could take on an entire army as Aemon had. Though it is night, the road is becoming increasingly more illuminated as I head towards the area where the palace is located. And though I am a little spooked by the sheer fact that I am walking by myself alone at night, I am more comfortable than I ever thought I would be on my own, in the outside world. Yet with everything happening, I've barely had time to think about the implications. The fact that I interacted with strangers, or that I went to an establishment and ordered food for myself. They are all milestones for me, and I suppose when I have time later to mull over everything that happened, I will be able to analyze everything more thoroughly. Right now, the most important thing is to get to Aemon, no matter what. It takes me more than an hour to get to the palace gates, and this is only following a straight road. The capital is a big place indeed. As I come across the big gates, I spot two large torches lit on either side, accompanied by two surveillance towers. In fact, everywhere I look, there are soldiers. The sound of hooves resounds in the air, and I hurry to the side, hiding in a bush as I watch a carriage draw up to the gates. The driver shows a permit to one of the guards, after which the gates slowly open up for him to come inside. Without even thinking, I act. Summoning the same lasso I'd used before, I pray what I have in mind will work. Feeling the energy materialize, I throw it at the back of the carriage, willing it to hook on a lower railing, but without sending any electricity through the lasso. Instead, I use it as it's been intended, as a rope. Considering this is my energy, I should be able to manipulate it at will. I force myself to focus as I pull on the lasso, imagining it shrinking in size as it pulls me forward at an insane speed. I almost yelp out loud as I find myself flying in the air, the other end pulling me towards the carriage as the rope continues to shrink. My eyes widen when I realize I'm going to collide with the back of the carriage, so I use my other hand to create another lasso, this time to stabilize me when I get to the carriage. Releasing a worried sigh, I find myself right between the carriage wheels as I secure myself to the metal railings. And it seems the entire process is finished just in time, as no one noticed, and the carriage speeds past the gate and towards the palace courtyard. Noting a slope to the side, I grit my teeth as I release my hold on the carriage, falling to the ground and rolling down the slope. I stay there for a moment as I try to assess what's happening around me and what the position of the guards is. Well, getting into the palace certainly wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. Eventually, I get up, surreptitiously making my way around the courtyard and towards an open door that leads to the palace. As soon as I get inside, though, I note that it's the kitchen, a grandiose kitchen by the sight of it, with tens of staff members. "Yo," someone points at me. "You're the new girl, aren't you?" She wrinkles her nose at me. Yes. I force a smile. "Stop dallying and go change. You can't go around in those awful clothes," she says in disgust. Luckily, she shows me where the staff uniforms are, and I quickly change into one. Maybe this will afford me more anonymity as I make my way around the palace. Going back to the kitchen, I pretend to work for a while as I try to find someone who can give me an idea about the palace's layout. On one side, some girls are rolling dough, so I join too, since that's not too hard, especially for someone like me with no experience to speak of. "I heard the Shadow General is being held here," I start, thinking a bit of gossip won't hurt anyone. They frown as they look at me, giving each other an odd look and ignoring me. "Wouldn't you want to see the Shadow General?" I attempt again, but it's to no avail.
"There's no speaking policy, new girl."
The same woman from before comes from behind, looming over me. "Oh, sorry, I didn't realize." I give her a look of regret. "I was just curious about the general, since he's such a famous figure."
"We don't see, we don't hear, and we certainly don't talk,"
she tells me none too nicely.
"Come, I have another task for you."
"What?" I don't get to protest before she pulls me aside, putting a tray full of food into my hands.
"The feast is short-staffed. You go into the hall, you don't talk. You don't make eye contact. You keep yourself in the background, understood?"
Yes.
"Good. Now go."
She gives me a light push. I don't even know where to go, but as I see an army of other servers head to the hallway, I quickly get in line to follow, thinking I could sneak off at some point. The line becomes so ordered, almost as if it was an army drill, and as they enter a big, illuminated ballroom, I find that I cannot move out of formation without drawing too much attention. Swallowing hard at the discomfort that prickles my skin, I watch what everyone else is doing and proceed to do the same, moving silently around and laying the food from my plate on the table. Curiosity gnaws at me, though, and from the corner of my eyes, I try to see what's happening at the table. The entire scene is what I would have imagined a feast for kings to be, and it's quite fitting, considering at the top of the table is the Emperor, at least going by the incredible garish crown he has seated on his head. But that's not the only alarming thing I see. As I scan the rows of people, my eyes come to a stop on my mother. She's not too far from the Emperor, seated between two males around Aemon's age. They are both wearing formal army clothing. Going by the intimate body language between the two, I have to wonder what their relationship is. My mother brings a goblet of wine to her lips as she chuckles at something one of the males says, before her gaze meets mine. Her eyes flare with shock when she recognizes me, but I'm even more surprised, since this was the last thing I needed. Luckily, the army of servants is returning to the kitchens, so I take my spot in the line. When it comes to entering the kitchen area again, I remove myself from the line. My pulse is racing. She shouldn't have seen me. Not yet. Fear pools in my stomach that she's going to sound the alarm and I will lose any chance I have to save Aemon. My breathing intensifies as panic continues to grow within my breast, but I cannot let it stop me. I came here with one purpose only, and I'm going to get Aemon back, whatever it takes. If I have to confront my mother while doing it, then so be it. I may have been reluctant in the past, but after the trick she pulled with Aemon, risking me like that, I'm clear where her priorities lie. More than anything, I'm certain she's never cared about me for more than the value I can bring her. The future she'd been telling me about from the beginning had been one where she groomed me to her liking, a mere puppet who didn't ask questions and just followed her lead. Unfortunately for her, I stumbled across Aemon, who opened my eyes to a life outside the walls of my house. Turning to head to the other side of the palace, I take another hallway so I can lose my trace. Yet just as I step onto the new corridor, I still in my tracks as I hear my name called out.
Sella!
My mother's voice echoes down the hall, and I clench my fists in fear that she will alert more people.
Good to see you too, Mother, I mumble dryly.
I should have known that Jill wouldn't hold you,
she observes as she comes closer, a hint of respect in her tone. Then why did you put me in one?
I hoped it would delay you. The execution is at dawn.
I gulp down the wave of uneasiness as I fully turn to face her. Well, here I am. And I'm not leaving without him.
You would risk everything for him?
She raises a brow at me. I nod. That and more.
He's played with your mind, Sella. Why can't you see that? How long have you known him? A few weeks at most.
So, in a few weeks with him I found out more about the world than in all my previous 18 years. Of course you wouldn't understand. All you've ever wanted was to keep me ignorant. You think I don't know about the books, but every lie you told me. I grit out. I was so brainwashed, I even justified those experiments you did on me when I was a child. Why? Because I thought it was your manner of looking out for me. But when have you? When?
You don't understand.
She shakes her head.
All this, everything I've been doing from the beginning has been for the future, for the good of the Empire and everything that will follow.
Really? And how's that? By killing the Emperor and framing an innocent man for it? By executing him in front of the entire capital?
Innocent,
she sputters.
Aemon D'Artagnan is the furthest thing from an innocent man, Sella. You think you know him? Shadow General is an apt term, for he's been the shadow of this Empire for too long, Sella. He's killed and slaughtered nations, towns, and villages. How is that innocent? You saw what he did to the army.
She spits out, and I can see that there's some personal bad blood there.
He destroyed Melina, and you're telling me he's an innocent man.
He did what he had to do. I raise my chin confidently.
You didn't see him at the time, so mighty on his horse and covered from head to toe in 1,000,000 blood. I saw him, and I'll never forget the sight. Aemon Dartan is a scourge for this empire. Let's not forget about the fact that he's been hiding his Rever heritage all this time. Do you know what the punishment is for hiding non-humanoid ancestry within the army ranks?
Non-humanoid?
Ah, I see you don't know everything. The Rever were the monsters of nightmares. Their abilities were as terrifying as their appearances. When they were wiped out, everyone rejoiced. And tomorrow, everyone who's ever looked up to the famed general will find out just what type of monster he is.
You're vile, I tell her, disgust rolling in my stomach as I look at her. We're so close together in resemblance, yet miles apart in our personalities.
Maybe I am, she shrugs, but you will not succeed today. I'm sorry, Sarah, but one day maybe you will see reason.
Just as she finishes talking, she starts chanting something in a muffled voice. Like before, her hands start glowing. My eyes widen at the sight, and I immediately channel my energy forward, sending a blast her way and stopping her from mouthing her words. Remembering Aemon's lessons about sorcery, I realize it hadn't been Aristol who'd cloaked the soldiers. It had been her. She is the one dabbling in sorcery. The blast sends her to the ground. Her breath comes in short spurts as she tries to put herself together and start chanting again. Her eyes narrow at me, and before I know it, the earth opens up, tree-like branches extending from below and coming towards me. What are you doing? I breathe out.
You're not the only one with abilities in this family.
She smirks as she straightens herself, her hands moving in time with the branches. That's sorcery, I accuse.
Maybe, she shrugs, but it only gives me an edge. Hasn't your lover told you already? To do sorcery, you need a big source of energy to draw from.
She brags before she sends the branches towards me. Summoning my lassos, I hurl them to the ceiling, coiling one around a chandelier and pulling myself up while using the other one to reach for the branches, sending zaps of energy deep into the ground so I can sever the roots. Pushing myself more than usual, I focus as much energy as I can towards the hole in the ground.
Don't tell me this is your plan when you know you can't hurt me. I can't. She smiles. You think you know yourself, Sela, but I know everything about you, including your future.
Future? What do you mean? I frown. She shrugs. And at the same time, another blast catches me by surprise from the back, sending me reeling to the ground. I slide on the floor before I'm knocked against a wall, the power of the blow so strong, I know I've broken something, or more. I breathe through my nose against the pain, as I feel my ribs perforate my skin and poke to the surface. Lifting my shirt, I see the bone sticking out, blood pouring out from the wounds. Gritting my teeth, I push them back into my body, my skin melding afterwards. Is that all you have? I provoke her as I spit blood onto the ground. You know that if you hurt me, I'm just going to heal all over again. Before I can blink, my mother is in front of me, her lips twitching in distaste.
I could kill you easily if I wanted to, she tells me matter-of-factly. You're not as invincible as you think you are, Sela.
Thank you for letting me know. Unfortunately, I can't let you do that. By the way, thank you for telling me that your sorcery is energy-based. You see, you're not the only one with new tricks up her sleeve. I smile at her as I put my hand on her shoulder. As I'd done with the blasts before, this time I focus on absorbing the energy from her. Her eyes widen as she tries to shove my hand away, especially as a pained cry erupts from her mouth.
Stop,
she whispers, pushing against me. I'm staunch in my position. She claws at me, scratching me with her nails and hitting me with her mini blasts, whose size decreases the more I hold my hand on her flesh. I'm sorry, Mother. I truly am. She starts trembling as she falls to her knees,
her breathing harsh, her skin turning a pale shade. She gasps for air, but it's becoming harder and harder to breathe.
"You will regret this," she grits out.
Before I know it, her arm reaches out, and she buries her hand in my stomach, just like she'd done with my heart on the battlefield. My mouth opens in shock, my eyes widening as I feel her fingers moving under my skin, almost as if they were signing something over my organs.
"You might kill me today, but I will kill your future," she says,
just before she removes her hand, blood dripping down her arm as she holds something clenched between her fingers.
"What?"
I jump back, an aching emptiness overtaking me.
"No children. No prophecy. No future,"
she continues, giving me a crooked smile as she says two barely audible words, and the organ in her hand catches fire. That's when I realize something. Whatever she took from me, it's not healing. It's not.
"I win," she laughs.
"No, you don't." I shake my head as I send the most powerful blast of electricity her way, watching her as her body burns and turns to ashes. Just like what she stole from me. I barely register the noise of feet thumping and heading in my direction. Still dazed, I quickly move out of the way, finding a different path so I won't be discovered. Yet I can't stop thinking about what she meant and what she took from me. Opening a random door, I get inside and lock it behind me. I can't make out anything in the darkness, but it seems to be unoccupied, so I take some time to gather myself. No children. My hand goes to my lower belly, where the emptiness still persists. Did she take part of my womb? The implications are too much for me to ponder right now. Not when I still have to get to Aemon, and not when, if that is true, it will wreck me for my entire life. More noise erupts from outside, and I keep myself still as soldiers run around the corridors in search of whoever had done the damage to the hall. Luckily, my mother's remains had melted away, and they won't ring the alarm about her murder yet. I doubt that wouldn't be an important issue, seeing how close she was to the Emperor. My pulse continues to race as I barely come to terms with the fact that I killed my own mother with my own hands. A few breathing exercises, and I have myself under enough control to move forward. I'll have plenty of time to dwell on my actions later, when Aemon is safe. Opening the door, I glance around, quickly closing it when I see two soldiers walking down the hallway.
"It's a kitchen girl, so she'll be wearing the uniform, but be careful. If what happened in the hall is any indication, she's not someone to underestimate."
The voice of one of the males registers, as well as the fact that they think I was the suspicious one. That means that I won't be able to move around freely dressed like this. Pursing my lips, I open the door, choosing a narrow pathway as I listen for any other loud noises. If previously I've hidden from the soldiers, now I need to find some who can lead me to where Aemon is being held. I wander around for a few moments before I see my chance, using my lasso to drag one of the soldiers to me. The entire ordeal lasts surprisingly little time, as he tells me what I need to know immediately. But as my eyes rove over his uniform, I realize that I might need something else from him. Careful not to burn his clothes when I turn him to a crisp, I shrug the uniform on, putting on his helmet and hoping I won't be recognized this way. I may not fill the uniform as well as a male, but in the darkened hallways I shouldn't be spotted. According to the soldier, Aemon is being held in the dungeon, which can only be accessed from the army garrison in the West Wing, so that's where I am headed. All the while, I can't help but keep Aemon in my thoughts and hope I won't find him near death. With how my mother had been speaking about him, I don't doubt that everyone who carried him any grudge or hated him simply for his position might have tried to make him suffer. The fact that the execution had been scheduled for tomorrow at dawn tells me just how afraid they are that they won't be able to contain him or his supporters. I reach the army garrison, and I'm lucky to see that it's mostly empty. Everyone is so busy doing their own thing that they don't notice me going down to where the prisoners are being held. There is a tunnel that leads down a narrow path before I note some light coming from torches on the walls. As I slowly walk inside, I see rows and rows of cells, each of them full. Taking one of the torches, I swipe the light at every cell in my search for him, but the sights I see are absolutely horrifying. There is not one person that is still whole. Some have had limbs amputated and left to rot, barely clinging to life, but others have already perished, some freshly dead, others well on their way to putrefaction. I bring my sleeve to my nose and mouth as I try to ignore the smell of death and waste that lingers in the atmosphere. Yet there is one commonality I see in most prisoners. The majority are non-humanoid. The Empire really has a vendetta against those that do not fit into its designated mold. I walk for minutes on end, and the cells seem to be endless. There's so much pain and death here that my heart cannot help but be moved by the sadness that permeates the air. The more I walk, though, the more confused I get when I cannot find Eamon anywhere. Where is he? I'm getting increasingly afraid that something might have happened to him, as I can't spot him in any cell. But it's only when I get to the end of the tunnel that I realize why he was not in a cell. As the row of cages ends, there is a wide area at the end that holds a myriad of torture devices. All the instruments are dirty and bloody, with a few people wasting away while strapped to them. And one of them is my Eamon. His white hair is the first thing I see, and knowing it must be him, I rush forward, holding the torch closer so I can ascertain his state. "Eamon," I whisper. He groans in pain, slowly lifting his head towards me, and that's when I realize what his torture had been. I gasp, my hand flying to my mouth in shock as I take in his condition, tears streaming down my cheeks at the pain he must have suffered. Both his eyes have been removed, the eye sockets empty as blood pours down his face. But that's not the worst. His entire chest cavity had been opened, his ribs cut to expose his inner organs, and his guts had been pulled out, currently hanging on the ground.
Priscilla.
His voice is barely audible as he moves his face, using his other senses where his sight cannot help him.
Is this an illusion?
He whispers brokenly.
Is this how you're going to torture me next, Elora?
He grits out, and it dawns on me that he's addressing my mother. Gods, but was it her who doled out this torture? If that is so, then I cannot find it in me to regret ending her life. Not when... I bite back a sob as I force myself to be strong for him. It's me. It's really me, Eamon. I've come for you, and I'm getting you out of here. He takes a moment to reply, probably still trying to ascertain if I'm telling the truth.
Zella. Zellamina. Why are you here?
He eventually answers.
Go. You need to go and save yourself, I...
He trails off, choking on the anguish that's seemingly holding him in a tight grip. No, never. I'm here for you, and I'm not leaving without you.
Look at me.
He states harshly.
I'm halfway to the grave.
No, I refuse to believe that, I tell him staunchly. Anything but that. I will not let him die, no matter the cost. Going closer to his side, I study the mechanism of the chains that hold him together. They are made of pure rhodium, and even while restraining him, they keep hurting him by rubbing against his skin, with no hope for relief. Pushing down the hurt I feel at seeing him like this, I look around for the keys to unlock his chains. Luckily, they aren't too hard to find. It's harder to get him down, considering the damage to his organs.
You need to leave me here, Zella.
He groans in pain as I help him onto the floor. How is he not dead with all this damage is beyond me, but I can only be thankful to whatever force kept him alive. I stifle my tears as I focus on him. Not leaving you, I tell him, softly brushing his hair as I lay a kiss on his skin.
Zella, please don't endanger yourself for me.
He rasps. I ignore his continuous pleas for me to leave, and I focus instead on his open ribcage. Trying to fight against the wave of nausea that comes over me, I pick his intestines off the floor and place them back in his ribcage, arranging them to the best of my ability without causing him more distress. I'm going to save you, Eamon. I'll do it even if it's the last thing I do. I murmur lovingly. Maybe this isn't the time for more experimentation with my abilities, but the situation makes for exceptions. Focusing my energy to the tips of my palms, I feel them tingle and heat up with vibrations. If it had worked to absorb energy, then it should work to give it too. And maybe, if I concentrate enough, I can channel that energy into healing. My hands become two beacons of light as they charge up with energy, bringing them to his head. I close my eyes as I will every little bit of strength I have left into him, picturing in my mind how his eyes are regenerating and how his ribcage is slowly closing, every open wound healing until he's perfectly fine again. I feel the energy transferring from me to him, and suddenly his entire body lights up. My eyes flare open as I take in the blinding show before me. As I'd intended, every little wound starts to mend. His eyes are completely regenerated, and his rib cage is closing, the ribs fusing together before the skin heals completely, leaving no scar behind. When it's done, I feel slightly lightheaded, but I quickly compose myself when I see him drag himself into a sitting position, his features full of disbelief.
Zella, you...
It worked! I don't give him time to say anything else as I jump on him, hugging him to my chest and peppering his face with kisses. Tears of joy coat my lashes, and I let them flow freely, for he is fine. My Eamon is fine. You're healed. Oh, Eamon! I whimper as I hold him so tightly. I wish I could sear myself on him so we're never parted again.
It worked.
He repeats numbly.
Selamina, Selamina.
He chants in a deep voice as he wraps his arms around me, giving me the gift that is his embrace. We may not have time to waste, but this moment is too precious. I love you, I whisper fervently. I love you, you silly beast. I still can't believe you'd sacrifice yourself for me like this.
I would have done so much more for you, my love. Oh, my darling Zella, but you have no idea how much I love you.
He pauses as he catches his breath, his powerful emotions flashing on his face.
I didn't think you would ever come for me.
He confesses.
I thought you saw my true form, and I would have never dared believe you would risk everything to come here.
And that's your first mistake, I chide as I draw back, giving him a pointed look. I would always come for you, Eamon. We're in this together.
I accept it as my fault.
He nods thoughtfully.
I will not doubt you again,
he says as he lays a kiss on my forehead.
Now, we have to get out of here. I already hear soldiers coming towards us.
We both get to our feet as Eamon regards his now healed chest with awe.
You're incredible.
He praises quietly as he feels his strength come back.
Now, let me give a little parting gift to my friends coming for us.
He says as he closes his eyes. The next time he opens them, They are fully black as a flicker of white swirls through them. Screams echo through the palace walls, and I already know that Aemon must have killed the first wave of soldiers coming after us. Yet it's not enough, as he uses his abilities to open every cell in the prison.
You are all free to go.
He yells to them. I look at him in awe that he would still do something like this when our time is running short. But then Aemon has never been the type to shy away from a confrontation if it gave him the desired result. You did good, I tell him, as he pulls me into his arms. In the blink of an eye, we are not in the palace anymore. Where are we? I open my eyes to see we're somewhere in a cave, yet it doesn't seem like a regular one.
This is one of my outposts. No one knows about this one, so we should be fine for a while.
I take a step further into the cave as Aemon manifests a lit torch in his hand, going to the torches on the walls and lighting them too, until the entire cave becomes illuminated. Wow, I whisper in awe as I take in what he'd done with the place. There's a bed to the side, a chest of treasures, and a hearth in the back. Yet that's not the only thing that gets my attention. Is that the sound of water? He smiles.
There's a hot spring. Come.
He takes my hand, showing